and welcome to the first episode of Would You Like to Know More? I'm your host, Andy Connolly. This is a podcast where we look into various nerdy franchises and discuss our love for that particular franchise. Some episodes, such as today's episode, will discuss the franchise in detail, like fan theories and favorite episode slash movie. We'll also talk about how interested people can acquaint themselves with this franchise. Other episodes will be more specific and will focus on a certain aspect of that franchise, such as the future podcast episode, X-Men Days of Future Past. A particular emphasis was also placed on our guests for each episode. They have to be nerds of the franchise, but they can range from the casual nerd who happens to like or be interested in the franchise, to the hardcore nerd who cosplays, writes fan fiction, draws fan art, and etc., as a means to express their love for the franchise. We do this so we can be as diverse as we can. People from different walks of life can offer different opinions on the same subject. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Hannah, why don't you start first?
Hi, my name is Hannah Holloway. I'm a freelance illustrator and pharmacy student in Kansas City and Lawrence, Kansas. I've been a fan of a lot of things. I like literature, art, podcasts in particular, and I'm really excited to be on the show.
Cool.
I am Alex Alcantor, also illustrator. And I've been a Godzilla fan for 20 years now. Quite some time. I was introduced to it at a young age and got a lot of knowledge and was here to have some fun and talk about this and educate in the best way that I can.
And I'm Samuel Lamb. I'm a student at the University of Kansas. I got into Godzilla watching videotapes at Blockbuster Video, so yay.
That's great. Yeah, just to get the ball rolling, what was your first memory of Godzilla, and or what was the first Godzilla movie you saw? And for me, I remember when I was over at a friend's house, he had like these little Godzilla figurines, and I had no idea what this belonged to, but they were super awesome. And unfortunately, the first movie I can remember watching was Son of Godzilla, which I remember liking a lot when I was a kid, and now I'm like, ugh.
You'll count it your taste.
How about you, Hannah?
Well, I first got acquainted to the series back in 1998-1999 when the TriStar Zilla movie came out, because it was like, hey, giant monsters, that's really cool. But when I really got introduced into the series, it was back in, would you say probably before college, like our junior or senior year of
high school?
I was going
to say, I was doing the Godzilla marathons at my house for a while, and that may have been more, would you say that was more of your introduction to what the character was supposed to be?
Definitely. Like, yeah. Alex Alcantor and Alex Hill, we'd all gather at his house and we'd go and get food, and then probably from about 8 p.m. to about 4 in the morning, we'd watch 3 or 4 Godzilla movies.
It was like a summer special. We did it like every other weekend until we literally covered all 28 movies at the time. Of course, now there's 29 with the new legendary one. And naturally, we don't count the TriStar film.
Of course.
So. Yeah.
Like I said, I got into it at Blockbuster Video. Back when that was a thing. I got to rent one video like about once a week or whenever we decided to go. And at some point, I discovered that there were a shelf of Godzilla movies. They weren't arranged in any particular fashion. They didn't all come from the same era. They didn't all make sense. And I don't know that I actually watched all of them or just one or two of them over and over again because I didn't keep track of which one on the shelf I had seen.
You know, it's a funny thing, as a kid, you don't really care about like continuity or whatever.
No,
like, you just
really
watch one film after another, and it doesn't matter if it's from like the first era or the second era. It's just like, hey, it's Godzilla and he's back fighting King Ghidorah again. This is awesome.
Dragons, explosions, count me in.
Yeah.
I was going to say, my first experience with Godzilla, I remember like it was yesterday, like crazy. I would probably be about 3 years old now. And mine actually was also Son of Godzilla, which, as you said, you didn't care for. I have a soft spot for it because the story as a whole is pretty well done. It is more kiddie, but like the human characters are at least fairly interesting, and I like the plot of it. And I also like Kamonga and Kamakura, despite them being a gigantic spider and a giant praying mantis.
Yeah.
But I think they're pretty cool. But I remember watching it. I remember the scenes that stood out to me the most is there's a scene where they first see the Kamakuras in the forest and you see the glowing eyes on it. And I was like, that's really cool looking. And then went out. My parents kind of informed me what it was. Bought the like smaller Trendmasters toys and the... My interest just kept on going from there, probably because there were so many movies. I mean, there you'd never seen them all. It was always like, oh, yeah. Here's one I've never seen. Here's one I've never seen. Because even at that point, like when in the early 90s, there had already been over 20 films. And some of those hadn't even made it to America yet. So,
I was incredibly lucky for me because when I was about 9 years old, I live in Lawrence, Kansas, and I still do. There's a theater called Liberty Hall. And they did a Godzilla anniversary where they showed like three of the films. I only managed to got to see one of them, but it was the one that mattered, and it was the original Godzilla film.
And in Japanese format.
In Japanese format. None of the altered American stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the perfect age to like start enjoying that film. Because if you were any younger, you wouldn't care about the plot. But no. You were just at that age where you're just like, wow, this film is just...
Like, it holds up so well.
It's not only a good Godzilla film, it's a great cinematic film in general. I mean, you could recommend this to any movie fan in general and say, you have to check this out, because it's definitely, it represents the mood at the time for Japanese filmmakers, and it just really hones it in.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's always hard to introduce people to that, because unfortunately... The series has kind of like several stereotypes that are associated with it that actually are not even true. And it's mainly comes from parodies that people have done rather than the films themselves. They see a guy in a very, very fakey looking rubber suit with a visible zipper destroying cardboard buildings where, in fact, a lot of those miniatures, a lot of effort went into them. And if you actually sit down and look at them, they have so much detail in them and everything. And the suits are really well made for the time and really put suitmation on the map. Because, I mean, I can't think of a whole lot of movies before the original Godzilla where it was done like with Creature from the Black Lagoon and a few other stuff, but that was kind of the first time it was done pretty well. But yeah, the film, it still blows my mind. The first time I saw, I mean, I'd seen the King of the Monsters version as a kid, but first time I saw the original version, subtitle and everything, and it really lingers on that aftermath of like, and it feels like it's a very real situation. It's really heartbreaking, especially with that the chorus of the girls singing,
oh, yeah.
Morning, may we have no destruction. It's a really just great film.
To me, I'm also sad because like at the end, like the I can't remember what his character's
name. Dr. Sarazawa.
Thank you. The scientist just like he kills himself along with Godzilla, and Godzilla disintegrates into like a skeleton, and it's just it's very moving.
And another thing is, it's not like, it didn't go the typical American monster movie route where it's a big action scene. Godzilla's not, it's not like King Kong where King Kong's on top of a building getting gunned down. But Godzilla's actually at peace in his own place, and it shows that he really just kind of, he's peaceful when he's on his own, and he kind of wants to be left alone, really. And there are other movies that elaborate on that a bit more.
Right, but, because he was like wakened up, right?
Yeah,
like,
he was a victim just as much as like everyone else in that movie was, because he didn't ask to be what he is. Humanity made him that, and he doesn't like it, and it's him taking his revenge out on them for basically meddling in power they shouldn't have been meddling with.
Which goes along with the theme that he was supposed to represent nuclear power, which nuclear power exists even if we're not touching it. The sun is a good example. and then we started messing with it, and then two cities were destroyed. So it makes sense that would kind of happen in parallel.
It's interesting how Godzilla in general has, like, throughout the films, like, a lot of them, with the exception of the more campy ones, they would always have, like, some sort of theme or some sort of, like, message or moral to them. Like, what would be some good examples of that?
Well, I was going to say, one of the main reasons is because director Ishiro Honda, who directed a very good chunk of the early Godzilla movies, he was He was a total pacifist. He was a POW during World War II, and he liked to kind of deliver a message about, like, humankind. And it not only shows in his kaiju films, but also he's done a few other films. I don't know if you guys have heard of the movie Atragon at all.
Heard of it, haven't seen it yet.
That's the one with the flying submarine that has the drill at the end of it. It was actually the first film that had Manda in it.
Oh,
maybe.
Yes, and that was with the underwater a civilization of Mu. Matongo is a phenomenal one. That's if you want like a good like old 60s Japanese suspense horror story, Matongo is a great one. But like back onto Godzilla though, like you look at kind of like themes where I know that for Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster, I know that that was kind of somewhat symbolic in a way of like I think Ghidorah at the time was supposed to kind of symbolize China in a way.
Have you heard
that one?
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, and how like the other monsters were supposed to represent like other countries like coming together kind of thing. But let's see.
What does Anguirus represent? That's the real question here.
Anguirus represents one of the best comrades you can have on your team. Because he will get beaten horribly in a fight, but he always keeps going, unless he gets his jaw broken, of course. But
and stays out of the way.
Yeah.
That actually leads me to my next question, which is, besides Godzilla, who's your favorite monster, and why is it Space Godzilla? For me, it would... has to be Anguirus. I mean, I'm a paleontologist. I love dinosaurs, and he's like one of the more dinosaurian ones. And I always feel for him. Yeah, like he just gets beaten on and just like dragged about.
But
like
he
Mechagodzilla,
has such a strong heart. Yeah. He always keeps going.
Godzilla's wingman.
Like he keeps going even though he's never going to get his own movie.
It's a real bummer. I'm really actually happy to hear you say Anguirus because he's a character that the current generation of kids like just aren't familiar with because we only saw him again in Final Wars and it doesn't really show how great of a character he was in the older films.
No.
But like one of my favorite moments with Anguirus was the scene where in Godzilla vs. Gigan where Godzilla's getting shot down by the Godzilla Tower and he like kind of goes to intervene but Gigan being the total sadist that he is kind of steps in the way like what are you going to do about it and then he just is like I don't care I'm going in and he ends up getting his face shredded by Gigan's buzzsaw and blood splatters all over the place.
What's your favorite monster, Hannah?
I would definitely have to say Biollante because, well, I'm a big fan of plants. I like plant monsters and such and her story is... Well, first she's on almost equal power with Godzilla. She's one of the few monsters that can pretty much hold her own against them. And one of the cool things is her origin story is that very classic sci-fi of very troubled scientist in his desperation makes a monster in an attempt to... Or he tries to make something for good intentions. He's trying to make replicating
his daughter
plants with
a
yeah, and bring back his daughter, and it,
which is a little selfish, but at the same time, it makes up for that kind of like classic like the scientist in his kind of hubris, kind of reaching too far, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was really cool. That was that sort of psychic element to Biollante.
Yeah. Well, for me, my all-time favorite Godzilla villain, his movie's not the greatest. It's Gigan, actually, because I love his design. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing. Like, I don't know what he is. I mean, some people say he looks like a chicken. I don't see it. Maybe in the beak, but I don't get it. I mean, he's like a cyborg. He's got hooks for hands, feet at the end of his tail. He's got a buzz on his chest and these weird... fish fins.
He looks kind of like an action figure in a
way.
Yeah, he does.
But the thing that sells him outside of his design is just his personality. He is such like the kind of... He's not stronger than Godzilla. In a one-on-one fight, Godzilla will always win. But he is very cocky and he's very sadistic in the way he does it. As like he has Godzilla unconscious and he takes time to like bash open his head and stuff like that and they mess around. I mean, he clearly took pleasure in causing pain to both Godzilla and Anguirus during their fight, and it shows in the suit Mation. That's could possibly, like, probably really well attributed to Kenpachiro Satsuma, who played Gigan, who also played Hedra in the movie before, and went on to actually play Godzilla in the Heisei series from 84 to Godzilla vs. Destroyer in 1995.
That's right, he did. The thing I find funny is... I love the bromance between Megalon and Gigan.
Yes!
Because they're just like, we have no hands, but we have claws. We're claw buddies.
Terrible movie, but it's so fun to watch.
I'm going to be the populist little kid here, because I was a little kid when I first started watching these movies. My favorite is King Ghidorah, because he is a giant dragon, very Western style, which is kind of surprising, made out of gold, with hair and scales, because why not, with three heads that shoots gold lightning, which doesn't make sense, but cool. It is very much a nine-year-old... If you were to set down a nine-year-old and say, make us a giant monster, it would be like, it's a three-headed dragon made of gold! It shoots lightning made of gold!
You know, it's interesting. His wings were originally supposed to be like a rainbow. Like, really? Did you guys know that? Yeah, there's actually some...
Why didn't they not go with that?
Well, there actually is some, like, promotional stills that have that. Like, it was, like, red, yellow, and blue on, the wings. I don't think it would have worked, though.
Like, been a little gaudy,
You look at it, and it's like, gold dragon, rainbow wings, this is the ultimate threat of the galaxy. And I'm like,
you know, that
doesn't quite work.
That might have worked for Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, giant monsters all attack.
Yeah, for that.
The only time he's ever been a good guy.
Yeah.
Which a lot of fans are really bitter about, but I don't care, because Kaneko knows how to make his monster movies, and GMK and the Gamma Trilogy are very clear evidence of that.
I want to go and, like...
Unless you're Baragon. Well,
yeah, Baragon got the short end of the stick.
He really did.
He got left out of the title, but I think him and Godzilla have the best fight scene in that movie.
I'm going to go out and just be that guy, but I didn't really like that movie. Compared to other Godzilla movies, I'm not going to get on you for it.
I'm going to go ahead and say that movie had the balls to call out the American Godzilla movie for being awful, and then its Godzilla was... at least equally as awful.
Really? You don't like the GMK Godzilla?
He was pretty terrible.
Really? I love GMK Godzilla.
The thing...
Even if you discount the milky white blind person eyes that Godzilla had, which I assume is just because he was possessed by...
Essentially, yes.
Space ghosts.
Was that the...
Space ghosts? I was going to say, no, it was the spirits from everyone who died in the Pacific during World War II.
Was that the first Godzilla film where they started to use more CG for Godzilla?
No.
2000.
Godzilla 2000 was the first one where they kind of started using it, mainly during his swimming scenes.
Okay, because the later ones, I'd see that CG and I'm like,
See, I really like GMK Godzilla because that was the most ruthless we've ever seen Godzilla in a movie. Like, he never, during the whole fight with Baragon, he did not cut him a break. Normally, Godzilla will give someone a chance to, like, get up and fight back, but I mean, Baragon's again, on the ground, he just stomps on him, and he's like, he was
possessed. It's not really Godzilla, even. It's physically Godzilla.
The thing is, I never seen Godzilla.
I see it more as like there was an influence over Godzilla, because it was the resurrected original Godzilla from 1954.
Hmm.
And Kaneko confirmed that in interviews.
Really?
Yeah, it's the original Godzilla resurrected. And he has confirmed that his Godzilla is also the immortal one. Like, he cannot be killed. You can kill him, but he'll always come back, as it shows at the very end of the movie when his heart is beating in the ocean, because...
And then they use the old theme, which they haven't earned in that movie.
Yeah, basically, it's the whole thing of, like, when... one of the great things, like, there's a documentary I would recommend everyone to watch. It's called Bring Godzilla Down to Size, A History of Japanese Special Effects. And it's like kind of like the history of how they made these effects, but it's also got a lot of opinions from a lot of the people that made these films. And one thing... Oh, man, I can't remember who it was who said it, but, he described Godzilla as, like, instead of a creature with emotion, he said Godzilla represents an emotion, period. And I'm trying to remember what the exact quote was. He said, like, Godzilla does not have emotion. Godzilla is an emotion. That's what he is. And basically, he's just kind of like the... When it comes down to it, we all know that he is basically the physical manifestation of all of mankind's hubris and mistakes, pretty much. And he's there to kind of show them... When you've done it wrong, or when you're causing problems, Godzilla's there to knock you into place. And That's the way it goes.
Not even not necessarily. I mean, to reference the most recent the new American Godzilla, the one that actually has Godzilla in it. He seems to just represent nature, like a restorative force, and it has nothing to do with humanity at all. It very much seems like he represents nature not caring about humanity.
Yeah, which I was actually kind of bummed about, because Gareth Edwards said in interviews how Godzilla was supposed to represent the punishment that mankind deserves, and that was not shown in that movie at all, and I was a little bummed.
He's framed more like he's framed more like kind of how you'd frame like a...
Gamera. His personality reminded me of Gamera. Not a bad thing. I like Gamera, but that was that's one of the most docile Godzillas we've ever seen. Usually, once you've opened fire on Godzilla, even if it doesn't hurt him, he comes in and he's like, okay,
well,
you're
done.
Well,
he was busy. Well, he had two Budos to kill and eat and then tear apart and then leave.
But at the same time, he usually would just be like, they were all the way in the city. He would have done it.
The thing is, though, that is my favorite... like iteration of Godzilla, that and the 2000 version,
the legendary
version. Okay. You folks at home cannot see this, but I brought my Godzilla 2000 figurine with me. But Godzilla 2000 remains one of my favorite movies because of how neutral Godzilla is. He doesn't like, he's not a force for good, and he doesn't want to kill everybody. He's just there doing his thing, and when he finds Orga,
Orga,
he's like, I want to fight this guy. And he goes through the city, and he fights him, and he's like, okay, I'm going to go now. And
except you forgot to mention the part where he literally blasts the city into flames at the very end of the movie. Well, he doesn't actually leave. He destroys the rest of the city and then walks away.
While I'm here.
The funniest part about that is, like, it's in both the dub and the sub, but they're looking on this destruction, and one of the characters goes, but why? Why does he destroy the city? And they say something like, maybe there's a little Godzilla inside all of us.
No one understands the meaning of that
line.
And I was
like, this is the best line in Godzilla history by
far. No. I probably thought the same thing, too. I was like in fourth grade when that movie came out. But something like that. But I kind of took that as Godzilla's basically saying, because he acknowledges humans in that movie. He flat out kills Katagiri. And then he walks away.
That's true. You gotta love it.
But I kind of took that as him telling everyone, you live because I allow you to live.
Well,
that's
Godzilla
kind of what I took from it.
Godzilla is extremely territorial. I'm fairly certain, it's been a long time, but I'm pretty sure they've mentioned a couple of times that he may be fighting certain monsters in certain instances only because they're in his territory. Japan is mine.
In terms of, like, mainly the Heisei series, he was, the Heisei series, that iteration of Godzilla from a story standpoint is actually my favorite because he goes through a very clear story arc throughout the seven films. And this is actually something really interesting I'm going to bring up here. This was something I kind of pieced together on my own after, like, kind of doing an analysis on the films. But you look at, like, the Heisei version of Godzilla actually never really does anything in the movie without being provoked first. Like, not once in any of those films. Because when you think about it, here's the thing. We look at the first one. He's basically been mutated by a nuclear submarine, which, again, they think it's a bomb, but it's confirmed it was a nuclear submarine when they messed with time travel.
And then he happened to be on an island where another bomb went off, just coincidentally.
No, that's not the case, actually. He was at the bomb... because remember, this might be confusing for anyone listening, because in Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah, they went back to the 1940s, they removed the Godzillasaurus, which they thought was the original Godzilla from 1954, but the 54 Godzilla is not the Godzilla from the Heisei series. He's dead. He died in the 50s. They moved him at the bottom of the Bering Sea, and they were like, okay, that's it. No more Godzilla. Except when they come back, how come everyone remembers Godzilla? They never changed history. It did a loop. They basically made the new Godzilla happen because at one point the character,
Tezuka, they leave
the Dorats.
The Dorats there.
Yeah, the Dorats.
And what mutates them is that the bomb goes ahead and hits the island.
Bomb,
so Godzilla was there and was already
mutated. No, he was not there. Because remember, they teleport him to the bottom of the Bering Sea.
But before they screw around with time travel, he was there. That's why
they
moved him.
It's a loop. They always screwed around with time travel. It's a loop. It's one of those time travel theories where they went back around in an attempt to change history. They essentially made the history that already was. The best way I would say is like...
I don't think that's the case, because otherwise Ghidorah would have already been there, and rather they come back to the future and Ghidorah shows up and they're like, what is this?
And at the same time, the Ghidorah was not being controlled, because the Futurians were not there in the past, and they were the ones who were controlling Ghidorah. This is also all stuff that's basically been confirmed in numerous theories, that the loop is what has happened, and that's the one that makes the most sense, because Godzilla wasn't there. He was at the bottom of the Bering Sea, because there was a part where the main character pulls out the newspaper and he sees that there was a nuclear sub that sank in the Bering Sea in 1975, and he pieces it together. That's what created the Godzilla that we know right now, not the bomb. But Ghidorah was kind of dormant on the island, and once he was ready, once everything was planned, Ghidorah's ready and everything like that. It's a really confusing matter, and fans have debated it numerous times, because everyone's like, wait a minute, shouldn't Biollante not be gone? Like, no one should remember that. But history was never changed, because people do remember Biollante, because she's brought up in Godzilla vs. Space Godzilla as being a possible reason for his creation, which I completely blame on Mothra, by the way. It makes so much more sense for her to be responsible, because she actually went into deep space.
It's always Mothra's fault.
Dang it, Mothra.
Yeah, sorry if I got super confusing to anybody listening, because that's a lot of stuff to take for casual people.
It's time travel, man.
I want to, like, shift gears for a moment.
Yes.
And I want to bring up another controversial topic, because Hannah and I were just discussing about this before the recording session, and I was surprised by her answer. But do you watch Godzilla films in the sub or the dub?
I would have to say pretty much all the time subs, and I don't want to come across as one of those folks who's like, oh, always got to do the subs of everything all the time, because some dubs are really good. It's just in the Godzilla movies, generally, the subs are not nearly as clunky. The dubs can get very clunky, and some of the voices, maybe it's just because I remember, like, watching the MST3K of, like, Godzilla versus Megalon with Andy, and, like,
Jet Jaguar!
Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
It would get really grating, so I would just say go for subs, because you're going to get closest to the original material as you can.
Go ahead.
Okay, sure. I'm on the complete opposite spectrum, because to me, I always grew up with Godzilla being like in the dub, because it was on VHS tapes. It's not like you could like switch over to a sub if you wanted to.
Same here.
But like,
and that's part of the experience.
And the thing is, Godzilla, no matter how serious you get, like, it's only to have a certain cheesiness factor to it, and it's enhanced by the poor dubbing. And as such, I always have to watch it with the dub, because I just get a laugh at it. The only exception to this is the first Godzilla film.
Oh, yeah, which, I can understand that.
Which I watch sub only. But all the other ones, I'm like, I don't feel like reading. I just want to have a good time. Let's do dub.
I completely disagree on that, and here's my reason. I'm with Hannah, subtitles all the way. And the reason that is because, again, another stereotype associated with Godzilla is all the actors suck. That's one I hear all the time, and it really irritates me, because Toho, the way that the Japanese studios worked is they had actors that were signed on to that studio and had to work for that studio. And a lot of the people that worked on the early Godzilla movies were the same people that worked with the likes of Akira Kurosawa, and hopefully you guys know who that is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. He's one of Japan's most best filmmakers. Right. He made Seven Samurai, which is phenomenal.
Now.
But these were the same people that were working on those caliber of movies that were winning Oscars in Japan, pretty much. And they were the ones who were also making these Godzilla movies. And their performances are actually really good. And unfortunately, the dub kind of tarnishes that. And kind of like you said, you do it for the laugh, but I like to admire the actors for their acting, because they do such a great job. And they really put so much heart into it. I've been to G-Fest a few times, and the actors that they bring out, like, they had Akira Takarada there last time. They are so nice. They love their fans. They're, like, just so pleased that they have such a big following in this foreign country. Even though no one speaks the same language, it's still that level of appreciation there. and it's just, oh man, it's so cool. I love it. But yeah, they didn't get real into the bad actors until later on. Early movies have good acting, later ones not so much, and I still stand by that. I think I would watch some of the 90s movies dubbed, I will say, though, because they have they like to put in Caucasian actors into a lot of those 90s films.
That's
and
true.
I stand by, there is not a, there must have not been a single good Caucasian actor ever, like, in Japan at that point, because there's one guy, the old guy in Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2. Watch him on subtitles, and you will be surprised how bad he is. I think he's the worst actor I've ever seen in a movie.
That's funny.
Because he goes, you look at the dub, and he says, it is impossible for them to fight in that condition. They'll be lucky if they make it back. In the actual dialogue, in the subtitles, he's like, it is impossible for them to fight in that condition. They'll be lucky if they make it back. He literally talks like that.
I don't know, man. I've seen so Mono. Grating. It'd be a low bar to.
Yeah.
I would rather watch Tommy Wiseau over that.
Tommy Wiseau in the next Godzilla film.
Oh God.
That'd be hilarious.
Oh, hi, G.
Oh, hi, G. Okay, the funny thing is, Sam and I watched Monster Zero last week, and that had one of the best American actors.
Nick Adams.
Yeah, because he was just like, I'm a badass. I'm in a romantic relationship with this girl. I'm in prison, and I'm gonna bust out of prison
you
now.
You rats! What you do to her?
I like that if you view that as him representing America in that movie, it turns out Japan appears to have the same idea of Americans as Americans do, in that there's a Japanese guy in a prison cell for like a third of that movie, just trapped there with the only way out of the cell in his pocket. The American guy shows up 30 seconds later. They have beaten the crap out of the guards, gotten out of the cell, and they are swimming away from the island. He's just like, America, fuck yeah, the whole way through.
I love Monster Zero. It's such a fun movie.
It is. You know, I was on the Reddit R Godzilla today, and one of the discussions were like, do you like Monster Zero, or do you like Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster more? And I was like, I like Monster Zero better, because it's like a certain campy quality to it.
Here's my answer to that. In terms of overall plot, I give it to Monster Zero, because I love the plot line with the Exilians, and I also love that interesting love story between Glenn and
One particular version of the Exilian
I feel
girl.
So embarrassed that I can't recall her name. Namikawa, Mrs.
You should
Namikawa.
Be embarrassed.
Yeah, I was. I lost my train of thought.
Mrs. Shame.
Kumi Mizuno as Mrs. Namikawa. I really loved that storyline in there. But in terms of monster fight, though, I gotta give it to Ghidorah Three-Head Monster, because I always get like absolute chills every time when Mothra goes in to fight Ghidorah solo. And after Godzilla and Rodan see her getting her ass kicked, they're like, that's it, we're stepping in.
Yeah.
And seeing them cooperate, like Mothra getting on Rodan's back to get a good angle at him, Rodan like turns around, dives bomb Ghidorah, knocks him out of the air, and Godzilla grabs Ghidorah by the tails, and it's like everyone's going, it's such an intense fight, and you could imagine how much of a nightmare it was due to all the wires on Ghidorah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just to film that whole sequence would have been a nightmare.
That actually brings me on to my next question. And I wanted to ask this question before our time was up, and that is, what do you think is the best fight in the whole series?
That is a tough one.
It is a definitely tough
that
one.
That is really tough.
Because I still haven't really, like, quite figured that out yet for myself.
I can't pin one down, to be honest.
Man, I could make a list of my favorites, that's for sure, but...
Because are you going by effects? Are you going by, like, cheese factor? Or...
I don't... Like, what do you have a special sentiment to?
I would say Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, because it is just so goddamn motivating.
It
like
is.
They at the point where that fight starts, they're like, "Oh my god, all is lost. Everything is going to be destroyed because this Godzilla cannot be harmed and nothing is left. He's going to destroy humanity. Oh no." And then just out of nowhere, just rising out of the sea, this new monster, this Mechagodzilla comes, and it's like, humanity has made it! We're using the Futurians monster against their own plan!
I love that reversal in that movie, and that is a really cool scene. Mecha King Ghidorah is pretty awesome. I was gonna say, actually, if I had to pick one that, like, I'm going to have to go with an absolute classic, and some people might say, oh man, you totally, like, you're just going because you're biased, but it's actually the very first fight Godzilla had with Mothra in 1964. And it's not necessarily the best, like, choreographed exactly, because basically it's like a prop, and you got Haru Nakajima and the Godzilla suit essentially fighting a prop. But and that makes it sound bad, but Akira Fukube's music, that was Akira Fukube at his absolute best. Like, I love his music. It's so, like, dun, 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 dun,
implying
dun.
He had a worst.
It's, like, it's so great. But, like, there's that, and there's also the drama of it, because Mothra didn't want to intervene, but they had to go to the island, convince her. And there's that drama of, like, she's about to die right now. Like, Mothra is on her deathbed, but the thing I love about the classic Mothra is she is such a fighter. Like, even when the odds are against her, she's fighting a very, like, dangerous monster that can kill her with one shot of his breath. She's going in, giving it her all, and she puts up a hell of a fight with him. And it is so cool, and it's even really sad. I mean, I always cheer for Godzilla, but it's so sad when he does finally kill Mothra at the end of that fight. And then...
spoilers.
Yeah. Well, the movie came out in 1964.
Godzilla wins.
Calm down.
Spoilers.
Actually, that's not even the last fight of the movie. No spoilers.
But what do you say, Hannah?
I would probably have to say in Godzilla versus Megalon, Gigan was in there, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I would have to say Godzilla and Jet Jaguar versus Megalon and Gigan, because it's just so much fun to watch.
And then there's the dropkick.
Yeah, the dropkick.
There's the dropkick, and Gigan and Megalon are just like, yeah, let's beat the crap out of these
two. You know, one of my
two.
Favorite moments was when they trapped Godzilla and Megalon? Wow. Godzilla and Jet Jaguar in that ring of fire.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I don't even know why Godzilla's freaking out, or Jet Jaguar. Neither of them can be harmed by fire, so I don't get that scene, but they're all like stand next to each other, and Godzilla, goddamn, I keep on messing up the names. Megalon and Gigan are kind of like prance around, they're like, oh man, we got him so good. And then Godzilla just grabs on Jet Jaguar, he flies out, and they literally go like, what? What did they do? How'd they do that?
One of them can fly. We didn't account for this.
We didn't think about that.
That's so funny. Like, to me, I'm torn, because when I was a kid, my favorite was always. Godzilla versus Gigan, with, like, Gigan and Ghidorah on one side and Anguirus and Godzilla on the other side, because, like, Godzilla just uses Anguirus as, like, a weapon, and it's just great. But I have to say, after thinking about it, that fight was a little bit boring, because
it had a lot of stock footage.
A lot of stock footage.
That's why it doesn't hold up as well, unfortunately.
Which is why I'm going for unusual choice for me, actually, is Godzilla against Mechagodzilla, the 2003 one. The one that was a prequel to
2002,
yeah, yes. It's a prequel to Tokyo SOS.
Yeah.
And, like, because when Godzilla roared, Mechagodzilla was like, what the heck? Because for fans who don't know, in this version, Mechagodzilla was built out of the skeleton, like, its interior design had the skeletons from the previous Godzilla. Mm-hmm. So that's where they based the machine off of.
And it kind of had a little bit of Evangelion influence in that, like, that it had the berserk mode.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so when Godzilla roared in, like, pain, the Mechagodzilla just went berserk because he was originally under control of the humans, and then he was like, wait a minute, what am I doing here? And that fight was really emotional for me. It's kind of funny to say, but it was like, wow.
Yeah, I will say, I actually like Kiru as a monster character, mainly because it is the bones of Godzilla, but... I'm not a fan of Tokyo SOS, mainly because of the ending. I think the ending is so lame. But
that's probably my favorite Mechagodzilla design in general. His origins and whatnot.
Yeah, his origins cool. I'm not gonna lie, huge fanboy of classic 1974 Mechagodzilla. So retro.
Yes,
I love how retro he is. The missiles for fingers.
His lovely
Z
Rust appearance, sort of,
and just like. Just going around, and he was a really good hand-to-hand fighter and range fighter. He was a beast. Nice. Kiru was too, though. The only problem is that Kiru couldn't really take hits very well. They always had to go in and repair him every other, like, 5 minutes.
I'm going to change my answer. My answer is now Godzilla versus Charles Barkley. Because Charles Barkley comes in, faints him out, and then comes in for the dunk. It's amazing.
Oh, no.
I saw that on Tumblr.
I'm sad to say that I own that comic book because I own all of Dark Horse comics Run of Godzilla, but man, I hate that comic book so much.
Cannot be beat.
It's, now, if it was like illustrated as like the 1970s late Showa version of Godzilla, I'd be totally cool with it, because he would totally agree to play a game of basketball. But they have the 90s Godzilla there. He would never agree to play basketball. He would have killed Charles Barkley.
Your main objection is that the Godzilla they picked would not be up for a pick of basketball.
He would not be up for it.
That's your biggest complaint.
That is
about
my biggest
Charles
complaint right now. My biggest complaint is that is the serious Godzilla. He should have just killed Charles Barkley. If they just drew in the 70s Godzilla, I would have been okay with
the
it.
The funny thing about that is that Cracked, when it was a magazine and not a website like it is now, I remember this distinctly. They made fun of that commercial by, like, Charles Barkley going up to Godzilla and was like, "Yo, man, you can't beat me with my new sneakers." And then Godzilla just, like, atomic breaths him. And then, and then the last panel is him putting on the new sneakers.
Godzilla putting on the sneakers.
Taking these with me, too.
Godzilla just mugs Charles Barkley.
Have you guys seen, there's an illustration someone made on DeviantArt, some illustrator guy. He did he did a redo of that, but it's the 2014 Godzilla, and it's older Charles Barkley. So Charles Barkley's all middle-aged and overweight and in a suit, and it's the legendary Godzilla jumping up doing a slam dunk. And Charles Barkley, I don't know if you guys know, he made that comment about, like, Texas women are, like, really fat and stuff, and a lot of people got really pissed off at him. It's this picture of, like, Charles Barkley just, he can't win. And he's like, "Man, you got a lot bigger than last time." And then there's these little people at the bottom of the page going, like, "Bigger than San Antonio women, Chuck." And he's like, "Hell no." It's so bad, but
that's,
I thought it was funny. That
I never heard of that, yeah. So
I saw it on, like, some show on the break room at Target.
Given legendary Goji, though, he could probably just reach up there since he's, like, way bigger than the rest of them.
Actually, not really. Because Heisei Godzilla was 328 feet tall. Legendary Godzilla is 350 feet tall.
Oh.
However, he weighs a lot more.
Yeah.
Because Heisei Godzilla is 60,000 tons, whereas Legendary Godzilla is 90,000 tons.
Like a literal mountain, almost.
Yeah. Except, I think Heisei Godzilla would still be able to pick him up and throw him around like he's made of paper, because he kind of did that to Mechagodzilla, who weighs twice Heisei Godzilla's amount, and he just picks him up by the head, like, "I don't care how much you weigh." Throws him a mile away.
So, I want to get on to one of the more important questions of this podcast, and this is one that I actually asked to all three of you before we began this recording, and that is, well, one of the purposes of this podcast is to introduce a nerdy franchise to people who would like to know more about the said franchise. In this case, what three Godzilla movies would you introduce to new Godzilla fans and get them started on the Godzilla track? Anyone can start if they wish.
I'll go first here.
Okay.
I would have to say probably, maybe I'm just a lark for the 1985 Godzilla, but I really like that one, and I feel like if you want to see a mean Godzilla, quote-unquote, it gives a really good example of that. Pretty much anything with King Ghidorah, but I'd say GMK, definitely, because you get a
GMK.
Yeah. GMK, because you get a nice into the mythology and all the different monsters there.
You mean Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah?
Yes.
Giant monsters all out attack. Got GMK it. Is the shortened version because the title's so long.
Got it.
And then I would also say the original Godzilla, because it's not just a good Godzilla movie, as you said, it's a good movie in general, and definitely worth a watch. And so you get a nice spectrum of Godzilla movies by picking those three.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is a bit hard for me. Obviously, the original one's on there, because that is absolute, that's like the mandatory reading. It's like, before you watch these others, you have to do this one. You can watch whatever ones afterwards, but you have to start here to realize what the character is actually about, kind of thing. But, and to kind of see that evolution, because Godzilla's obviously come very far away. I always kind of compare him to Batman. Batman started out super gritty, and then he became very cheesy, and then he's back to gritty, and Godzilla kind of followed the same arc.
That's true.
Except Batman gets a lot more praise, which is cool. No, I like Batman, but Godzilla don't get
enough
credit.
That's a different podcast.
Anywho, though, the other ones, I would also say GMK, because that's always been, it's been a great, like, just to open doors, people, because it's one of the more it's more modern, so people don't have to like sit through like an older movie and stuff like that. The story's very interesting, and the fight scenes are really well choreographed, and it implements some more modern effects that people might be used to. The suitmation is really good, and it's never failed. I always introduce people kind of on that movie, and that always... numerous friends have always been thirsting for more after I show them GMK. They're like, these movies are actually good. Show me the other ones, pretty much. And the other one I would say after that, that's where the tough call comes in.
Space Godzilla.
That's actually, Space Godzilla's probably my bottom five movies,
that's
actually.
That's funny.
But, yeah, I don't care for that one very much. Space Godzilla's a cool monster, but he suffers from Darth Maul syndrome.
So, like, what's your third one, though?
My third one, I guess it's a toss-up between Mothra versus Godzilla, because that one's just, again, just a solid movie, and Godzilla versus Biollante, because it is one of the most fascinating, interesting, and visually interesting Godzilla movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we were saying earlier, Biollante is just an absolute pleasure and treat to watch in action, because she looks so cool, and the visual effects used for her, like, the puppet searing and everything, and she's just so massive. She's so big. It's crazy.
All right. I would, of course, agree with everybody else. You have to watch the original. But I'm going to disagree on GMK.
Yeah, because you guys didn't care for that one.
Because that was ridiculous, and Godzilla looked awful. I would go ahead and start with, and I'm awful with the names, you'll have to forgive me, the one I was talking about earlier with Mecha Ghidorah.
Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah.
Yeah,
that 1991.
Because it functions as an origin story. They come to Earth, they say, oh, there's Godzilla here, and then they go back to where Godzilla comes from. And then they deal with that, and then they come forward and show you where Ghidorah comes from. And then they fight, and they show you how that resolves, and then the movie's over. So it just runs from, here's Godzilla, here's where Godzilla comes from, here's where Ghidorah comes from, here's the resolution, you're done. And that's a really good way to just encapsulate the series all in one.
That's true, that's a good way of looking at it. I never thought about that.
Yeah. And then the other one would be... the Mecha Godzilla that, and I don't remember which one it is, again. It's
70s version, or?
They figure out it's him because a chunk of his chest gets pulled off and they see the light glinting.
Yeah, that's
the metal
original
enemy.
One.
That's the first one.
Yeah, because it starts off with, Godzilla is acting really unusual and we can't figure out why, and then it shows you why. It's very storytelling-wise. It helps people that don't know what the hell is going on. Here's baby steps. Yeah. Here's what's happening.
They
kind of
hint at
happening.
It, because at first you can tell the roar is not the same.
That's true.
They do the...
It's kind of distorted, yeah.
Yeah, which is... It's funny, because every time I show that to people, no one ever picks up on the roar being different. I'm like, do you notice anything weird about Godzilla? They're like, no, it's Godzilla. And I'm like, really? You don't recognize the roar?
The same roar?
And it's like,
yeah,
then
they
shoots
they
out
you into that,
it's
though.
Yellow, and it makes like a laser noise, like, burp. And I'm like... Nothing yet? No, it's Godzilla. And then the real Godzilla shows up. They're like, wait a minute, I get it now. That one's fake.
All right. For my three, I might as well just set a disclaimer. It's like, the first one has to be the original Godzilla movie. It's a classic. You have to see it regardless. Second one, I have to agree with Sam. It's got to be Godzilla versus King Ghidorah. Not only are the monster fights and the plots good, but the human characters are one of the best I've ever
God,
seen.
Yes.
Usually the human characters are boring, but these human characters I just latched onto and wanted to learn more about them. I was so disappointed when we didn't continue their story in the following sequels, because I wanted to learn more about them, and we didn't.
The military commander who salutes Godzilla gets me every time.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Shindo. Oh, man. Okay, remember how I said... Oh, go ahead and finish yours, and I've got something else to add.
This one... You two might not like. It's Godzilla 2000, but
I like Godzilla.
Oh, you
2000.
Do? Okay,
yeah.
It's all right. I mean, I'm
I mean,
not
it's not my favorite,
it.
But I'm not gonna lie. I enjoy the movie. It's probably my, I guess I'd say maybe third or second favorite in the Millennium
and
series.
And the reason why I'm saying this to like for people who want to get into the series is this is like, again, there's a lot of good human characters. There's a monster fight. The music is also very great. The soundtrack is phenomenal.
Well, let's just say most Godzilla movies also have fantastic soundtracks. For people that don't know, I'm just saying, the music
but this was used
was
very
so
well, because there's a scene when, like, the monster first shows up and Godzilla's ready to kick his butt and he's just like walking slowly through the city and the music starts to build slowly and slowly. Yeah. It's the same Godzilla theme we all know and love, but it's used to like a degree that we've never seen before, and that it's treated like the Jaws theme, and that it builds and builds until it's just like, yeah, just go kick his ass, Godzilla, you can do it. It's definitely a film that, like, you don't need to know much about Godzilla, you can just go right into it and just enjoy the heck out of it.
It's a really good introduction film, I would say, and it's just one of those things, like, because it's a standalone movie, you don't have to really be familiar with the rest of the franchise, because it kind of sets you up in that world pretty quickly. Godzilla exists. There is these people that kind of try to follow him, predict where he's going next.
I love that.
And stuff.
Never seen that done.
It's
before.
Like Storm Chasers, but with Godzilla, and I thought that was a cool idea. And the characters in that one I also think were very fun. I like Katagiri. I like Shinoda. I even like his daughter and the other woman who has a name. It totally escapes me. But yeah, I was going to say, though, back to, because you guys mentioned King Ghidorah, and I mentioned how the 90s Godzilla went through a very clear story arc, and I never finished up on this. I was gonna say, like, he was kind of woken up in the volcano, like, erupting next to where he was sleeping. He comes back, and he kind of, like, that was his first chance to really take down humanity for what happened to him. Because we kind of learn, Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah, Godzilla, once again, he doesn't like what he became, kind of thing. And Shindo kind of dying, I think, was kind of, he feels kind of responsible for what happened to Godzilla in a way, and I think he was kind of trying to make an atonement for it. Because I think he knew Godzilla was going to kill him. He knew he wasn't getting out of that building alive. But like, when just how Godzilla sees him and recognizes him, it's like, it just shows, like, again, Godzilla, he's not, like, out to, like, destroy everything or anything like that. He's just, again, it's as cheesy as it sounds, he's really lonely, and he's got nothing to latch onto, except, like I was saying, like, King Ghidorah, like, that whole thing, he was put in a coma by anti-nuclear energy bacteria, and he came back, and he had to feed on radiation and stuff. And then in Mothra vs. Godzilla, they were just in the wrong place the wrong time, essentially, because that's basically it. They were going through the area he was sleeping, he got up. But from Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2 all the way to Godzilla vs. Destroyer, his motivation is based solely on Junior, the son.
That's true.
Completely. Nothing he does in that, in any of those movies, is not a result of Junior. Because the only reason he ever goes to the city in Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2, they took the egg, and he's looking for it. And then when he gets it back, he goes out to the sea, and they live on their island. The only time he comes back is when Space Godzilla kidnapped him, and they has to go into the city to fight him. Godzilla goes back home and stays on his island peacefully. The island goes up in a nuclear explosion. Junior wanders off on his own. The whole movie of Godzilla Destroyer, he's been following Junior. Because, again, this whole thing, this Godzilla's really lonely, and the only thing he can connect to is another Godzilla.
Yeah.
And that just makes the scene all the more heartbreaking when Junior is taken from him by Destroyer. And it really shows in a lot of that. And it's such an interesting story arc that Godzilla goes through, and I love it for that reason. He's not just a monster in that. He's a very interesting character that goes through this arc of being alone, finding that thing, just kind of like continuously having that put into danger and going out, and then unfortunately meets his demise, but then the sun lives on, kind of thing.
And becomes the new Godzilla.
Yeah, the new Godzilla.
I want to talk about Godzilla vs. Destroyer, because it's probably one of my favorite films in the entire franchise. It's not a film I would recommend you to start off with.
No, I recommend it's one to end on.
It's one to end on, because
you have to have a, like, tie to the character.
Yeah. Especially if you go through the Heisei era, which are the actual prequels to Destroyer, it's like you said, you bond with Godzilla, he has his own story arc, and in the Destroyer one, it's when he ultimately dies. And it's so befitting to me that Destroyer is related to what first kills the original Godzilla.
He's in a way, he's like, Destroyer. Whereas Godzilla's a creature, like, because Dr. Serizawa did not want to unleash the Oxygen Destroyer because he feared that it would kind of, like, become the new big thing. But he did not anticipate that, like, in the case of Godzilla, that a super weapon like that could make a monster on its own. Because Godzilla's a creature born of the nuclear bomb. Destroyer is a creature born of the Oxygen Destroyer.
And what monster better to have to fight Godzilla than the thing that originally killed him to begin with?
Exactly, yeah.
And I'm so pissed. I'm sorry, but I'm just so pissed on the DVD release. Because, like, in the original VHS...
The title screen. Is this what you're going to...
Not the title screen. Oh, the credits.
The credits.
The end credits, they show you, like, montage of the first film, then all the prequels leading up to it.
Yes, exactly.
And then it has the Godzilla theme. It just shows, like,
look. And then the very last shot is of the Meltdown Godzilla, like,
yeah,
roaring.
But then, like, in the DVD, they cut that. They're just like, nope. And it just pissed.
It's such a bummer, because it's one of the best end credit sequences
it is.
Of Godzilla.
And it's that, I think, is one of the best ending to, like, a series, to an era. It's better than Final Wars. It's better than Terror and Mechagodzilla, which
Final
ended
Wars.
The first era. It's so emotional. I'm sorry. I'm just like, like, that's like, you, if you get into Godzilla, you have to save this one for, like, when you're running out of films and you just want to, like, I don't know, or if you're building up through the Heisei era.
Nice closure.
It's a really like, because you're not used to seeing Godzilla die. He doesn't really die.
Oh, and he,
so when
he melts down.
Yeah, it's like, I was so heartbroken when I saw that as a kid, because, like, there was always the chance Godzilla's always going to come back kind of thing, but then you see him die, and the way he dies, you're like, he's not coming back.
He's definitely not.
He is gone.
Back.
There is nothing left.
I want to talk about the most recent Godzilla film that came out in theaters.
Yes.
And
this will be the part that everyone will fast forward to.
So let's try to keep through, keep your reactions to this short.
It's not 98 Godzilla.
This is 2014 Godzilla. But what are your thoughts on the new movie? And is Godzilla 2014 an actual Godzilla film?
Actually, I was going to say, could we do this as, like, go through what people liked, like, pros and then cons kind of thing?
Sure, well, for me, I really liked Bryan Cranston, which is in the cons of Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
I should be more specific here. Bryan Cranston's 15 minutes death. Like, he
liked the first 5 minutes
y'all.
Of the movie.
Yeah, and then he dies, and I'm like, what? Oh God! That means we have to be stuck with the sun. Oh no!
Yeah,
look-alike sun.
That's how I felt. The sad thing is, I kind of knew, because the whole time they've been talking about this is Aaron Taylor Johnson's movie, and I knew Bryan Cranston was only going to be a supporting.
Yeah, but they gave him, like, top billing on the poster. Pretty
well. That's
much.
Because
he was
Breaking Bad.
He was the entire trailer.
Yeah,
it was just Bryan Cranston and one shot of Godzilla.
They really pulled people in on that.
They should have just had him put on his Heisenberg hat and just go toe to toe with Godzilla himself
in a basketball.
I have yet to really say a pro, and I do like this movie, and I'm crap. Hannah, do you know?
I got a pro.
Okay, good.
I really did like this movie. Like, unfortunately, it's one of those things that now that it's out of theaters, I don't think it will have that much of a profound effect if you watch it, because you really need to see it. Really needed to see it in a big theater, because the sound, especially
the roar,
I literally got shivers when the roar happened.
I love how primal the new roar sounds.
Yeah.
It's so vicious. It's still the classic roar, but it
sounds like they just took the old roar and then combined it with the T-Rex roar from Jurassic Park.
I didn't hear the T-Rex in there. I mean, I heard some other stuff, but
I
didn't
hear
T-Rex.
It had a bit of whale in it.
Put a whale? Well, Godzilla is...
Well, it had some whale.
It's a sea creature.
Part whale, part gorilla.
But, like, whoever did the cinematography in the movie did a really, really good job.
Yeah.
How the shots are framed.
Yes.
Especially the scene in Hawaii, with the exception of that stupid dog. The stupid thing with the dog. I'll get to the cons.
And good news,
I
highly doubt that dog survived.
Yeah, I'll get
that,
to
there's no way that dog lived.
It's dead.
I'll get to the cons in a second, but I really love just how that whole thing is framed. The tide comes out. That when you're doing a Godzilla movie and you're not doing a rubber suit, you really have to use Godzilla like a landscape piece. Use him in reference to things and plan your camera shots around that. And when you see the tide come out, and it's all this buildup, the tide comes out, then it comes back in. Everything's flooded. People are going onto the roofs. There's this, the army folks on the roofs.
With the
flares. And then the flares, and the flares come up to, like, his belly scales, and then it pans upward to, he almost displaces the clouds, too, and then he appears, and it's the roar, and it's just, it's a perfectly satisfying buildup. And they managed to do a buildup similar to that at least twice in the film, and it's still really effective.
Would you say the second one is when he shows up in, like, Chinatown?
Yeah.
With the tail, and then he, like, goes down and does that, like, kind of, like, crouches down, does that really long roar.
Uh-huh. Mm. And it's, oh, it's just, it, that's how you do a Godzilla movie. And it's, they're very good in the don't show him... Don't show him immediately first off. They give, like, they give a slow build-up.
I actually like to frame my opinions on this movie entirely off of my opinions on the 98 one, because I see them as integrally linked together. Because the 98 Godzilla, its big problem was that it had nothing to do with Godzilla. They just... they took the idea... of, there's a giant monster, screw all that Japanese stuff, throw that away, we'll do it our way, and then that completely failed in every way, nobody liked it. And then we come back in 2014, and we're going to do another American Godzilla, and what do? We throw away all that American stuff that failed horribly, and we bring it back to its roots. Godzilla is a force of nature, he comes from Japan.
Yes.
Why that didn't occur to us to begin with, I don't know. And it actually has human characters that matter, and it focuses on them and how they're fighting the stuff. And ultimately, it ends up being a fight between Godzilla and the other monsters, and not Godzilla's babies versus Matthew Broderick, or whatever.
And the Simpsons crew, because they got a lot of Simpsons voice actors.
Whatever.
So I now remember why I like the film. I do like the film, everybody. I just had to remember why I like the film. It was the monster fights. Even though there weren't many monster fights, which is typical of an unusual Godzilla film, it's the way that they styled them. Because the fact that you have two monsters, the two Mutos, and one's like a little bit smaller but can fly, and you have one that's bigger but is just like, just walks, offers some sort of, like, a diversity in the fights. Because if Godzilla took on one Muto, or either Muto by himself, he could win. But with the two taking them on side by side, that's when the real trouble happened, and that's when you start trying, like, you can do it, Godzilla, but you can take these guys on.
Like, you're actually invested in the fight.
Like, so when he uses his tail as a weapon, that was awesome. Because Godzilla always uses his tail as a weapon, and when he used it, I was like, yes. But throughout the entire film, I was like, where's the atomic breath? It's not Godzilla if he doesn't have a
the very
breath.
End, he and pins then, the other then, Muto to the wall and just goes, bah.
Like, oh yeah, so first when he used it, I was like, yeah! I screamed in the audience. Everyone was like, what?
Don't worry, I cheered too.
But then, like,
oh, man.
But then when he took the female Muto by the jaws, I thought he was going to do it by King Kong style.
Yeah, that's what everyone thought.
He was going to rip open the jaws. No! He just takes his atomic breath and just like,
he's
just
like
Brian into
one-ups him. King Kong.
I just thought he was going to like throw the head in the air like, yeah, touchdown, woo! That was awesome. That was by
if
far
you
the
actually,
best part.
I actually saw the movie at Cinetopia where they have, like, that has the best screen quality I've ever seen. There's so many details that you, like, I missed. Like, when after he killed the male Muto with his tail, you realize one of his dorsal spines on his tail actually severed that Muto's arm. You see
really?
The arm fall off.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh. And then after he kills the female Muto, when he has the head and he does that roar, you can see, like, part of the spine hanging out of, like, the massive... chunk of
wow
yeah it's pretty brutal
yeah
but I was gonna say, okay, in terms of pros, everything Godzilla was pros in this movie. Hannah, you were talking about the Hawaii thing. I think that is one of the best build-ups to an appearance of Godzilla, period.
Yes.
And as of all the movies, all the Japanese ones, that is one of the best build-ups, because, like, from all the subtle things, like, they're saying, like, hey, we hear that something's coming the shore, and then Serizawa as Ken Watanabe, he's all like, I think he's coming, I gotta see this, and he's looking out, and then, like, the fins come out, and it's like, goes under the boat, and you see how massive he is under these battleships, just like, whoa.
Yeah.
And then, like you're saying, everything, and then just that whole, like, appearance where the foot comes down at the airport.
Yes.
Although I do wish it at least lingered there a little bit longer than what it did. But I'll go over that in the cons part.
But I was happy that for that shot it wasn't another shot of someone on a dock with a fishing pole being like, what's going on?
Because
that was in GMK and that was in 98. It's been a
I've seen enough Godzilla movies to know where this is going.
But I love the design.
Yeah.
Of Godzilla. It was something that I was kind of like I don't know yet. When I saw it, I was like, the feet are really small. Now the feet don't bother me. I'm like, I'm okay with that. I think that works. A lot of fans were bitching about it, but I'm like,
they were like, oh, he's fat. And I'm like, have you been paying attention?
That's what I said.
He's always had, like, fat thighs ever since, like...
I didn't understand that either. Everyone was saying, oh, man, this Godzilla's so fat. And I was like... Outside of Final Wars, when was the Japanese Godzilla so damn skinny?
Well, never. He's got a fitting body type for something so colossal.
Yeah, yeah.
In one of the movies, he even looks like he has like a six pack, and I'm like, what? Has he been working out? No, wait, that's the 98 version. That's my thinking. That's why it was bad.
That's another reason that was so
awful.
Yeah,
all that great stuff. I loved Bryan Cranston in it. I thought he was one of the most interesting characters, unfortunately, in the movie.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, the big con is the human side of the movie. It's everything that's not Godzilla.
I guess we're kind of on cons. I'll finish up my pros, and then I'll just go straight into cons here. The monster fights were great. Like, I liked seeing a Godzilla that wasn't exactly limited by suit. I mean, I'll always love the monsters that are suits and props fighting each other because of how, like, the craftsmanship and how good they look. But seeing a Godzilla that's moving more like an animal and fighting creatures like that, like, going with him more bites and grappling, clawing and stuff like that, I thought was really cool. And I really liked the breath. Again, the main thing that holds up the movie and makes me go, like, man, I really like this movie is... It had some really great moments, like the intro to Godzilla, the lead up, the build up to the breath with the fins glowing up down the tail.
Yes, yes.
And I also think it has one of the best opening credit sequences of a Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
With that kind of like old war footage, Monarch is like that.
And whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, and then it shows them drop the ball on him, and then like Godzilla is just kind of like ash, and you hear like faint like screams of people as the name shows up. I love it. I get chills every time I watch that. That's opening great credit sequence. It's so good. And
what'd you think of the halo jump thing? I felt like that was a good way to kind of
halo jump.
I love the halo jump.
When they do the big flare jump at the very end.
Yeah, because they don't.
They pass
the EMP,
by Godzilla.
That was
they pass by him, and I'm like, ooh,
that
that's
was,
really.
I love how they kept
spooky. Actually.
I love how they kept the 2001 music for that scene.
Someone told me that the music for that it was like. I forgot the exact name of the track.
I can't remember either. I just know it's the 2001 music. It's a very like hellish setting, and I love it. It sets it up perfectly for the ending, because like that up until that moment, you didn't really see much of Godzilla and Muto fighting at all, and you see them, and it's really creepy because it's all quiet, it's muffled, you can't hear, but you see them tussling, and then. When Aaron Taylor Johnson finally going for a landing, really slowly, you just see the male Muto fly in the background, like past the buildings. It's
like,
so eerie.
I really hope that doesn't smack into me.
Yeah, and then that's when they come up upon the female, and that's when Godzilla makes his badass entrance of like roaring at the top of his lungs in her face. But yeah, all the pros. That's me. I also liked Ken Watanabe. And a lot of people give him shit, I feel like. Everyone's like, he just stares everywhere. And like, I liked him in the movie. I really wanted to see more of him and Graham,
assistant.
Her character.
Yeah.
Because I thought she was kind of underused. I think she needed more to do as well. But the whole Monarch thing, I think, is really cool. Like, these people that are kind of like trying to keeping this monster stuff secret. And I really hope that for sequels, we follow Monarch and their team and not... Yeah. Mr. Military Soldier Bomb Disposal Man.
Well, you know, if this keeps in line with Godzilla tradition, we won't have to, like, follow them. They'll be gone by the next sequel. We'll be following other people.
If there's any recurring characters, it should be them.
I also enjoyed that they gave Godzilla an at least minimally plausible origin.
Yeah.
Like, they came up with a very creative idea of the background there.
It was kind
of
like he's always
It's not really realistic, but it's Godzilla, so it doesn't need to be.
This is the first Godzilla that we have confirmed is actually ancient. Like, he is millions of years old. Like, we don't really know how the other Godzillas were, because we don't know how long they've been around, but this one is confirmed as, like, he is just old and ancient, which I think is cool. However, I do actually kind of have a minor beef with that. his origin. And that shows that Godzilla is not like a product so much of mankind messing around with stuff. He was already the way he was. And I think that's not so much like a huge issue, but the thing I always love about kaiju is kaiju in general, not just Godzilla, but kaiju in general are always generally, and again, we say this numerous times, the mistakes of mankind incarnate, and they're usually created as byproducts unintentionally by mankind.
I think that's something that's been in decline in Godzilla movies in general, because the first one, he was obviously nuclear weapons, and then slowly he's been, oh, he was a dinosaur that was had stuff happened to him. Oh, this happened, and now he's gone from being nuclear power to just being nature, and he just comes up from the past. And then is a force of nature and goes and does
which goes things. With the theme of it. It seems like nuclear stuff is a little bit more dated now, but it's still relevant. I mean, we see that in like what happened with the earthquake and everything in Japan
and in Scotland.
And then like in the modern non-Godzilla kaiju movies, Pacific Rim, the kaiju are they're forces of nature, but they're like extra dimensional forces.
Yeah, they're
of
created
nature.
As weapons rather than stuff,
hubris.
But...
So cons of this movie.
Oh, someone else can go first, because I want to reassure people. I do like this movie, but I have a lot of cons.
There's an asshole in this movie who disarms bombs for a living. There are bombs everywhere in this movie. He never disarms
Not
a bomb.
A
he sits there at the end of the movie, the climax of the film, in front of a bomb for like 5 minutes. Does not disarm this bomb.
It
fails miserably.
I was going to say, I don't blame Aaron Taylor Johnson for his character. If you look at that script, he had nothing to work with at all. The writing for his character was so bad, so boring. And I think it was kind of a cop-out for them. I think they were trying so hard to make like an emotional story. They're like, let's make it about a soldier trying to get home to his family. I think they were really trying to milk it to the American audience with that.
Well, I mean, you know... In a lot of these movies, there's some human character that we follow who's usually pretty doofy and stupid, who's following around Godzilla, so that we can just have a human character there to relate to while we're watching Godzilla.
I seriously think
yeah, it's well, we also we had them following Godzilla, but Godzilla was just swimming the whole movie.
I'm honest, he was
following the Mudas.
I think the character of Ford Brody is one of the absolute worst human protagonists in a Godzilla movie, if not the worst.
I was actually about to relate him to what's her name, Yuri from GMK.
What was he like about Yuri?
I would say about equal. At least she had a reason to be going around doing stuff, because that's her job.
She was a reporter, and a lot of Godzilla protagonists are reporters.
And she did her job, because she reported on stuff. Yeah. Bomb disposal guy followed the bombs and never disposed of any of them.
You know what? I don't understand. He was telling his family. He was all like, hey, guys, I'm trying to get back. And I understand, like, he couldn't get back from Hawaii because the airport was destroyed. Mm-hmm. And so he had to go with them. And he couldn't get back because all transportation was down. I understand. You want to get on your train. But he's like, hey... Just wait for me to get there.
That's
just
the opposite of good advice.
You know?
And how it should have ended did that correctly. Because I'm a responsible father and husband. Get the hell out! Run for your life!
You guys see the news, right? There's giant monsters. Don't even wait for me, because this is probably going to go badly anyway.
There's Godzilla and two crickets on their way. Get out of there.
Two crickets.
But no, wait for me.
I don't care if I lose you because I can't physically find you anymore. Get away! I don't want to lose you because you're dead.
When the Wi-Fi comes up, we'll find each other.
Now, here's the thing. I was, I totally lost my train of thought just now.
That's fine, because I was about to say Godzilla theme wasn't in the movie.
Yes,
they probably didn't have the rights to it.
Well, here's the thing: if a movie with a budget of $160 million couldn't afford to get the rights to Akira Fukube,
It's not that they couldn't afford it. Toho very extremely limited what they would give them. Like they offered loads and loads of money, and Toho said, no, you can have the name Godzilla and the design. And they kept asking for things like, can we put Ghidorah in it? No, you can't have the rights. And that goes
back.
Well,
they're doing it now.
The funny thing is...
Because they proved that it's not going to be a 98 Godzilla where... If we give you the name, and then you just crap on it for an hour.
That's probably why the one I would go with the Mutos. Actually, let's see. I was going to say, It's, oh, man, there goes my train of thought again. Well,
it's very much that Toho did not trust an American studio to do another Godzilla movie correctly for a big-budget movie, and then now that they've proven that they care and aren't going to destroy things as they go by, they're trusting them with... Who's in the next one?
They've confirmed... well, we don't know who's in the next one. We know throughout the sequels we have confirmation on Mothra, Rodan, and Ghidorah, the original big three outside of Godzilla.
Yeah, because they proved they're going to do it justice, and more or less, rather than the way they did before.
I'm honestly looking forward to Rodan's design, because, like...
Same here.
Like, Ghidorah, like, yeah, he's going to be a badass.
I'm interested to see him.
Ghidorah's going to look really alien in the Legendary franchise.
Rodan is going to be a cool...
I'm personally... concerned with how they're going to do Mothra, because
that's how I feel.
We've seen how they do giant insects, and that didn't look anything like Mothra. So what are we going to get out of this?
I'm not concerned with the design of Mothra. I'm pretty sure they can make her look like Mothra, but will she?
They've got to have
act
the twins.
Like Mothra. Because the thing is, a lot of here's one thing that makes me a little sad is that a lot of ever since this movie came out, you get a lot of people on Tumblr who claim that, oh, just because they've seen the 1954 movie, they suddenly know a lot of stuff now. And one of them is like, so, like people go around saying, yeah, Mothra's going to be the next villain, and you have to have someone come in and say, Mothra's never been a villain. She is not a villain.
She's a sweetheart.
Well, she's like the most benevolent kaiju ever.
If they do it correctly, I see Godzilla in these new movies is a monumental destructive force of nature, and they can do, because Mothra is always represented, the creative and nurturing part of nature.
Yeah,
and if
exactly.
they just find a way to mesh those together, then it'll be great.
Okay, I remembered what I was going to say.
All right,
about
go for
it. Okay. Another thing I had is, I know a lot of people aren't too fond about the amount of screen time Godzilla got in the movie. Because it has been timed officially. It's 9.5 minutes total, which is a two-hour movie. And I want people to keep in mind, in the original movie, the original Godzilla movie, where they were saying that they were taking the most inspiration from, and their whole reason they were going to keep Godzilla hidden and stuff like that and not show him that much is because they wanted to replicate that movie. Godzilla has 20 minutes of screen time in that movie, and that movie's only an hour and a half long.
That's true.
I feel, and this is what I've been saying since this movie came out, is... people that complain that Godzilla doesn't show up soon enough, that there's too much humans in this movie, that there's not enough Godzilla, are people who have never had to sit through 20 minutes of trying to convince small twin girls to sing to Mothra for 5 minutes so that Mothra will wake up, so that Mothra will go fight Godzilla. That is a 20-minute sequence, and if you've never sat through that, then sure, there's not a lot of Godzilla. There's too much human in this movie.
Nope, that's not it. That's not it. It's not the screen time aspect. It's the sheer lack of focus on Godzilla. Because look at it.
That's true.
Aaron Taylor Johnson's character, he never says Godzilla's name. The only time he actually acknowledges Godzilla is when he's coming down on, like, the parachute, and when he sees Godzilla when he's collapsed, and when he kills Muto. Not once does he actually talk about Godzilla, really. The only characters that talk about Godzilla are Watanabe, Sally Hawkins' character, and the general guy. They're literally the only characters that actually talk about Godzilla.
Bryan Cranston
the whole movie.
Doesn't talk about
no, because Bryan
either.
Cranston dies before Godzilla shows up.
Yeah, well,
now,
he's talking
I'm
about.
Okay,
he's
I'm okay with the movie focusing, and people will have argued. Well, other Godzilla movies focus on the other monsters more, but this is an introduction movie. This is not a sequel, and that's why Nancy, my girlfriend, she did not like this movie because she said this movie felt like a sequel, and I never saw the first movie because this movie wasn't establishing Godzilla. It was establishing the Mutos and how Godzilla is coming after them. Godzilla is not driving the plot. He's simply reacting to it. The whole movie is about the Mutos, and Godzilla is simply there to put them in down at the end of the movie.
I never thought of that.
And that's actually why I'm actually irritated with the movie, because I feel like Gareth Edwards said he wanted to tease the monster. I'm all for that, but he teased the wrong damn monster. We already know who Godzilla is. We already know what he looks like. The Mutos, nobody knew about them hardly before the movie came out.
Honestly,
why not take the advantage and tease them?
That's kind of, I feel, the opposite way, because it's relying on the fact we all know who Godzilla is. If this was an hour and a half of, here's who Godzilla is, you'd just feel like, oh, these people, what?
Well, it's not
who
exactly...
Who doesn't know who Godzilla is?
Now, keep in mind, I'm not saying that Godzilla needs to show
right
up
now.
Immediately into the film. I'm simply saying at least bring him in and at least have the story focused on him. He wasn't really the focus of this movie. It was simply about the Mutos.
Well, I honestly, I feel like this is, that's the complaint I have about every time we try to reboot a superhero franchise, is the complaint, and I agree with it, is we always decide we have to have an origin story. Like, we don't remember 10 years ago where Spider-Man comes from.
Yeah,
we're having another Spider-Man. We have to have another origin movie. We all know. Everybody knows who this is. Let's just go for it. And they did, and I think it worked out all right.
Mm. So, unfortunately...
I got one more thing.
Hannah hasn't had much chance to speak.
Okay, sorry.
My cons with the movie, like, I was watching Godzilla vs. Biollante last night, and I feel like it's a con that was in one of the older Godzilla movies as well. Really jarring shifts in tone, it felt. Like, around the end, I understand that, like, it felt kind of weird cheering for Godzilla as he left. I mean, I was
because
cheering
he killed
for
a lot of people
well,
on Honolulu.
Yeah,
honestly,
than Superman in Man of Steel.
Honestly, the way I would go with that is they're cheering for apparently he absorbed every drop of radiation from that nuclear bomb that just went
off
in the
bay. That's the only expression. That's the only thing I can think of.
We're not dead.
Because technically, that city should have been completely irradiated.
I mean, there was a throwaway line about how it was some specially designed bomb, and there'd be no fallout, but the flat-out radiation from the bomb itself should have killed them all. And the only way I can imagine that that didn't happen is if
Godzilla,
this radiation-eating Godzilla, ate the radiation.
Good thing he sponged up. But also one of the things, like... It's a very Hollywood movie issue. Like, it's kind of disappointing that I saw at the very beginning, this is less of a Godzilla movie trend and more of a trend in a lot of Hollywood movies now, that we see Bryan Cranston go up, he's like, "Hi, wife that I love so much," and then I am the second he was talking to her, I immediately turned to my brother who I was watching the movie with, I'm like, "She's gonna die 10 minutes in. I know it." And I'm like, kill the wife for some man pain.
What you didn't realize is then they're immediately going to kill him too.
Yeah,
it was like sucker.
You know, it's funny because like in most Godzilla movies, when someone's had like family killed by monsters, they're usually very vengeful about it. Like, how many times has someone wanted to kill Godzilla because they knew someone who was dear to them that died because of Godzilla? Yeah. It happens quite a bit. Yet Mr. Ford Brody, who had both of his Karens killed by Mutos. Doesn't care. He's just like, why didn't you guys...
I feel like I ignore everything he did in the movie when I'm remembering this movie, because it wasn't important.
You probably also don't remember he had he must have had the best plot armor ever. Because let's see. He's, I'm going to do this train mission, Soul Survivor, by jumping 200 feet into water and surviving. That's
and
not
the
how
didn't
it works.
Eat him or notice him.
Yeah. No, it's like, he's the sole survivor of that. He's also the sole survivor of the Halo jump mission. And, how convenient, they decided to come and grab him off the boat, too. Just so he could be with his family and have the touching ending. I honestly would have preferred him to die. I would have preferred him to die at the beginning and have Bryan Cranston. This
big character we've been building up the whole movie doesn't die in an American film. That's just not something we do.
Unfortunately.
So, unfortunately, we're actually a little bit over time. So, I'm going to wrap it up really quickly here. In 1 minute or less... It's going to be hard for all of us. In 1 minute or less, going back to the original question, is Godzilla 2014 an actual Godzilla film? Because a lot of people are saying, no, it's not Japanese made, it's not Toho, it's not actual Godzilla. But I would say, starting now, it is a Godzilla film. And this is kind of like a very shallow reason why. Because he had an atomic breath.
No, that is a very valid reason.
That's definitely. Like, He may not look like the Godzilla we grew up watching, but he certainly acted like it. He fought monsters. This is a Godzilla film to me.
He's not to the letter, but he's to the spirit. And if you have the spirit of the Godzilla, he's big, he's fairly neutral force of nature or man's hubris, and he's got the atomic breath, then I think you've got a Godzilla.
Okay. Well, yes, absolutely. It is a Godzilla movie. This is the occasion when I walked out of that movie, I was like, that was the official 29th Godzilla movie. Because obviously the TriStar one didn't count. It was the Godzilla I knew. I mean, it wasn't the same design, but look at how much his design has changed over the course of 60 years. What is this? It's not that much. He has that iconic silhouette, the dorsal fins, the three rows, they glow, he shoots the breath out. He had that spirit, again, like the neutral, which actually is kind of in the line of Heisei Godzilla, which is my favorite, and I really like that, despite him being a bit more docile than I would have liked. But everything Godzilla is great. For a sequel, just
more Godzilla.
Let's get some more of him, please, and let's get a better writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. It's definitely a Godzilla movie. I'd say it's more of a Godzilla movie than, say, Final Wars was.
Oh yeah, I completely agree.
Which it's interesting to think of Americans building a better Godzilla movie than Japanese people at all ever. But I think it happened.
Awesome.
Well, thank you guys very much for coming here and recording the very first episode of Would You Like to Know More? It's very treat to having all three of you here. As a final statement, you can follow Hannah's Twitter and Tumblr account, Hannah Carbons, and her portfolio is heholloway.com. That's heholloway.com. You can follow Alex's DeviantArt account, Virus91. Sam didn't give me anything for him.
I don't have any. I'm just a dude.
And you can follow me on my blog at unapologeticnerd.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope you come back for next time.